Hello, I'm Arnold Hamilton, editor of the Oklahoma Observer.
And I'm Marianne Martin, and this is ObserverCast, your weekly deep dive into Oklahoma politics and policy.
Presented by the Mary Lou Lemon Foundation.
It's been a really long month of January in the United States of America. We have seen the city of Minneapolis under siege from the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, led by none other than Kristi Noem and another guy that's no longer there anymore. But one of our own American cities, major American metropolitan areas, has been under siege from an Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And it's been awful. And I don't think we even know the half of it here in Oklahoma. But meanwhile, we're in the middle of an unprecedented, purge, repression, extraordinary rendition of immigrants, law-abiding immigrants or otherwise throughout the United States. And Oklahoma is not immune from this in any way, shape, or form. I was doing some brief research before we were recording tonight, and the governor of Oklahoma, which is a whole other thing, launched this past fall Operation Guardian, working with OHP, which reads to me like effectively federalizing the Oklahoma Highway Patrol to stop and round up any illegal immigrants, undocumented immigrants that they find in vehicles, commercial vehicles on our interstates. And I feel like that's really been flying under the radar here in Oklahoma more than it has in other places. For those who don't know, I commute regularly between North Texas and Oklahoma. And so I cross that border every week twice. And the last time I did, right after, apparently they were stopping right at the Oklahoma-Texas border. And this was shortly after they were doing the same thing north on the north I-35 border, because I-40 and I-35 are very, very busy intersections across the country. Well, anyways, it hasn't been Minneapolis in Oklahoma, but we do have a thriving, vibrant, very important immigrant community in the state of Oklahoma that has nonetheless been affected by all of this. And so ICE has been present in the state of Oklahoma. ICE has been doing raids. ICE has been picking up people. And like, I think extraordinary rendition is really the only way we can talk about it. Similar to, the Gulf War days of the early 2000s, where people are disappeared, their family members can't find them. And it's awful. So, and I'm just going to put the backdrop to that, really quick before we go into it with our guests today. Today was the day Governor Kevin Stitt delivered his last State of the State. Thank God, his last State of the State. And in it, he called for one Oklahoma. This was directly taking aim at the tribes in the state of Oklahoma, the jurisdiction of the tribes as sovereign nations in the state of Oklahoma, and what they could or could not, cannot do within their own tribal boundaries. The chiefs and the president, they were all in the gallery there at the legislature today. And there's been multiple statements put out. And so this is just a really interesting backdrop to this Operation Guardian. There's just so many layers to all of this. But just this piece of him trying to deny the sovereignty of the tribes within our state while trying to assert the sovereignty of the state of Oklahoma while simultaneously federalizing our state police forces with a hypercharged Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency that is just gone completely out of control, has no bounds, no accountability, has innocent people in harm's way, has ripped families apart, and it's absolutely awful. And so we have the one and only Reverend Dr. Lori Waukee with us this evening. She is a part of a coalition, I guess we could describe it like that, right? Of clergy and concerned citizens who delivered a letter. So we want to talk to her about this because I think Arnold and I would both say that this is definitely a values-based, faith-based discussion when we talk about immigration. what you do to the least of these, right? So I'll just stop there. I kind of rambled a little bit, but there's just so much. This involves so much and it ties into so many things. And so I had to get it out there. But anyways, welcome. It's great to see you. I wish we wouldn't always have these awful things to talk about, but I'm so glad we have you to talk to about them. So good evening and hello. Tell us who you are and tell us what you do.
Well, it is so good to be back with y'all. I am Reverend Dr. Lori Walkie, but I prefer people to call me Lori because that's my name. And I am the senior minister at Mayflower Congregational United Church of Christ in Oklahoma City, Northwest Oklahoma City. I am also a leader with VOICE, which stands for Voices Organized in Civic Engagement, which is a coalition of dues-paying institutions that work on issues of the common good and concerns that are facing Oklahoma City families. It is a broad-based coalition. So we've got United Church of Christers working with Catholics and Methodists and Baptists, and most recently the National Association of Evangelicals to try to move the needle on issues that are wearing families out here in the metro.
So, tell me about the letter that you delivered, and why you guys decided to do this.
So, our we are trying to figure out how we can build power so that we can influence what's happening in Oklahoma. A very favorite line of all state officials is that immigration is a federal issue. Well, that is
Yes,
correct. Correct.
it is.
And also, there are things that happen in state that matter deeply. And as a coalition that has many of the member institutions of voice are churches. We really try to come at it from that angle. And as everyone knows, Governor Stitt considers himself to be a very devout evangelical Christian. And so we really felt like we could speak to him as fellow siblings in faith about what we're seeing in our congregations and churches. And so we went to our congregations and said, "Hey, we want to build a relationship with Governor Stitt, because we think that, he has some say in how we approach our immigrant neighbors and how we treat them, officially and unofficially." So we went to our congregations. They wrote letters. We delivered over 650 letters. Doing several things. One, we did want to thank him for doing some good work when former Superintendent Ryan Walters tried to kick undocumented kids out of public schools. And Governor Stitt did the right thing. He actually did the right thing and said that we're not going to do that. Kids should be able to go to school. And we did deeply appreciate that. So we did thank him for that. We also brought him stories to let him know that this is hurting our faith communities. Anti-immigration policies hurt our faith communities. It's bad for business, which he also cares deeply about. And it's not making anybody safer. And as someone who, also identifies as a law and order man, we really felt like those things should be important to him. So we got a meeting with him and were able to share some of the experiences that we had and hand him over 650 letters, as well as some letters from our adjudicatory heads. And he was responsive. That got us a couple of more meetings. And so that's where that piece is sort of right now. We're continuing to be in conversation, and clearly we need to hit some more of the points that we're trying to make a little harder.
Well, clearly the murders in Minneapolis have stirred the country and not just here in Oklahoma. How much rocket fuel, if you want, I don't know, maybe that's not a good term, did it provide when it became public that ICE was actually looking at converting the warehouse down in Southwest Oklahoma City to a detention facility? Did that
Let's
did
talk about that too. I want to go into depth a little bit about that if you can.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, to me, that was kind of like, whoa, if people weren't thinking about it, hard as that is to believe, but I'm sure there are some people who just weren't thinking too much about it, that really brought it home.
Yeah, the story of that warehouse broke between, if I'm remembering co correctly, br br that broke between the murders of Good and Preddy
Yes, that's right.
in the, like, I mean, white hot center of that. And so people were, I think there was some agitation, but then there was a something that a lot of people could focus their energy on, in ways that there's not been a ton of engagement on ICE raids that are currently happening, as well as the Oklahoma Highway Patrol's relationship with ICE. But that warehouse really exploded things.
It's really that warehouse, the location of it, Southwest Oklahoma City, large Latino population in that part of the city. There's so much about all of that that's really kind of exceptional. And I think in a way really showed a lot of Oklahoma City's true character, right? A lot of people, like specifically Mayor Holt, who I think a lot of us are kind of on the fence about, but for him to actually call the owners, I really feel like that's one of the biggest flexes you can possibly make, right? It's like call the guy. But just really like the outrage, the level of outrage, and just the way Oklahomans have actually showed up against immigration, this very, very geez, violent, murderous, without impunity, immigration action around the country, far, far, far from borders is outside of what we would think would be the jurisdiction of ICE. All the sidestepping of really just the rule of law. It's been really interesting to see how it's been playing out, because it was going to be in, people's backyard, but it wasn't necessarily going to be in Nichols Hills, right? It wasn't necessarily going to be in Edmond. So I don't know. I mean, that was just a really unique thing, but I also have to ask, I think it's a little too on the nose that this is happening in a blue city in Minneapolis, that he went after Chicago, that he's gone after Los Angeles. And then we're kind of like, we have a very compliant governor and a very compliant AG here in Oklahoma. And so, can you talk at all about Gintner Drummond's kind of presence in all of this and what he's been saying about it? Because it's revolting. So
Yeah, well, I mean, again, I think that that's the right word for it. And I think that the language that we hear from so many of our statewide officials, governor, the AG, it is repulsive. It is the language is dehumanizing. That was actually one of the things that we have been trying to work with Governor Stitt on, because it sets a tone. Words matter. Stop dehumanizing our neighbors, especially, these are families in our churches. These are kids our own kids go to school with. They are our neighbors. It's really frustrating, to hear language that is like so aggressive. While at the same time, you know, with Gettner Drummond, it's been really frustrating because we keep being told that he wants to be a centrist candidate, and that, you know, just as soon as he gets elected, he'll be reasonable again, like everybody was hoping. But I don't know how we cannot tolerate the in-between. And frankly, how long do we get after the election? Do we get the real Gettner for 2 weeks before the re-election campaign starts? I don't. Someone, no one has let me know when, how long we're going to get him. So that's a pretty frustrating speech.
So I was telling my partner kind of about all of this a little bit earlier, and I was like, you know, it this all goes back to you know, his family hails from Osage County, and you look at the fact that you look at the fact that ICE is not differentiating. Brown folks are brown folks to them. You know, people that look like not, you know, WASPy are getting wrapped up in this. So even if, you know, even if they can go to certain parts of town, they could go to any part of town and pick up, you know, our indigenous community members, right? Which they have been doing. You know, and to hear the tribes telling their citizens to carry your papers with you, you know, I have many friends who have, you know, spouses, family members that, you know, are of Latino descent or indigenous, and I mean, and they are carrying their papers with them, and simply because of the lack of discernment from this enforcement action. And so when you, I just got to go back a little bit. When I was writing my dissertation, I was talking, and it was on immigration reform in Oklahoma, and I was talking to my committee chair back in 2008. That was a long time ago. And I literally said, I was like, I wish we could add the tribal part, the tribal piece of this, like immigration discussions in Oklahoma, on top of it being, you know, Indian country. And she was like, that's a whole other conversation. But just like to have all of this happening on top of itself right now, and the way all of these ideas of like nationality, citizenship, and who has a right to actually be here. And the means with which they have to go to police that idea.
It reveals the how deeply racist our immigration system has always been. And so it is in the enforcement of immigration policy and law
Right.
is also
The
inherently
policing
racist.
of immigration law, right?
That's
Like
right.
this
That's right.
active policing and enforcement of what it means to be a citizen, which is completely up in for grabs. First of all, it's fictional. It's 100% fictional. But then you layer the settler colonialism on top of that, and it becomes violent, right? And then you have come
That's
up,
right.
it is literally contrived in this very moment. The means by which ICE is enforcing, you know, what it means to be a legal citizen of the United States is completely arbitrary. It has no connection to actual statute.
None at all.
And so it is even more dangerous than it ever has been because we're all prone to it, right? And I would say that maybe that's the point.
Yes,
The control,
right. It
right?
is just about power and control. That is absolutely correct. It is about controlling bodies, control over economics, control over movement.
And boy, when you think about the economic impact, but then go ahead, sorry.
One of the, I mean, you brought up the, I mean, we were talking about the economics of it. So, when I was in Minneapolis, over the 21st through the 23rd of January, we went down to Lake Street. We were a couple of blocks away from actually where Freddie was murdered. And on Lake Street, there it is mostly it, I mean, it's just a ton of restaurants and stores, mostly owned by immigrants. And 70% of those businesses were closed because the fear was so pervasive, they could not open their doors. Every single door and window up and down the street, whether they were open or not, had, post signs of, ICE is not welcome here. Collaborators with ICE are not welcome here. You have to have a warrant in order to enter. But the economic devastation was unreal. And there were a few. So when we went, we were doing some ICE watch patrols, and we did go into a few of the businesses that were open. And I mean, it was like a handful. The gratitude of the people who owned and who worked in those shops was unbelievable. That they were so glad that they could see somebody from out of state, a bunch of clergy, out of state clergy, were here witnessing and would go and tell what's really happening, back in our own communities. But just the palpable fear of the folks there was unbelievable. I mean, I've not ever experienced anything like that where I just felt like was actually hanging in the air over an entire city.
Lori and I were talking before we all got going, and one of the interesting things we were in Portland last weekend, and we were at Powell's
Oh, geez,
bookstore.
Portland, Oregon. Okay,
Yes.
I just, duh, okay.
Yes. And so we were we the barista who was helping us in the cafe there wore a t-shirt that struck me that and Lori had seen this, I'm sure, but that said, "No one is illegal on stolen land." And as you were talking about the connection with the
Yep.
tribes, and I told him, I said how much I loved his t-shirt, but it was fascinating to me to see that. And I think even though we live here in Oklahoma in the midst of all this, a lot of that tends to get overlooked, oddly enough. You would think maybe we're too close to the forest to see the trees on something like that.
I think here we are. Like, I think in Oklahoma we definitely are, because I feel like in the past 30 years, just kind of our awareness as Indian country has really heightened. Before it was, I don't remember growing up and really knowing, like I knew, but we sang little songs about it in elementary school. But it was, I feel like, especially when I started working in the legislature, I was like, and I had just come back after being gone for 8 years, like the awareness and the consciousness of being an Indian country was so much greater than I think it's ever been. And I think Stitt has been counterproductive to that in the way he keeps poking them in the eye, because they, because like I think it was Chief, sorry, I didn't mean to talk over you, Arnold, but I think it was Chief Hoskins' statement today, and he was like, they say that we're causing chaos when the evidence is to the contrary. Like everywhere you look across the state, the tribes are a force for greater good. I mean, they're opening medical schools, for God's sake. Like,
Well, Stitz is channeling Trump in some respects here. I mean,
yes.
there's a lot of projection going on here, I
But
think.
it's very, I'd say, narrow in the way that he can target, our indigenous, our tribes. And it's like classic Stitt, right? It's what he's been doing his entire governorship.
But we've been calling out and giving him some props as well, Lori, from the conversations that you all have had, and he's had some moments for sure.
But
And we've called out and we've called out Gintner Drummond, who's maybe one of the most
such a disappointment.
disappointing I've look, my bar's not set very high, unfortunately. I've covered politics my entire journalistic career, and that's getting, I have a lot of gray hair. But somebody that I dare say really needs to be called out in all this is James Lankford. And the
Yeah.
reason I say that, this is a man of the cloth.
Oh.
He should know the teachings of Jesus as well as anybody. And he did the right thing in DC on immigration and got his knees cut out from under him by Donald Trump. And now he's running like a scared, I don't know what. But the first thing when the warehouse story broke in Oklahoma, he comes right out and says he tries to equate it to the federal prison transfer center down at, Will Rogers Airport, and say, well, this is just, it's nothing to worry about, nothing to see here. This is just the same sort of thing as that there. Of course, overlooking completely or certainly not wanting to draw attention to the fact that the Federal Bureau of Prisons people are highly trained professionals,
They're not
correctional
mercenaries.
professionals. They're not masked, banditos
You're
who are on the loose in our, at our cities and doing who knows what with people behind closed doors. So to me, I just the cowardice, I'm just lost. I'm just
I'm just going to say, I would never expect that sort of bravery from an evangelical of Linford or Stitt's stripe. I just wouldn't. Like, they never stick up for those things. When Stitt, frankly, when Stitt was like kind of moderating in the past year, and he was like, don't go after the kids, I think I regarded that as like he's got to get a job in 12 months, like he's got to be employable somewhere, so he can't be quite the zealot. But like,
So, Lori, are we that cynical?
no, it is
Are we
an
realistic?
incredibly difficult environment, which is to bring it back to my messaging that I just feel like I'm hounding people with these days, is that we have to figure out, we have to, and it may be at a granular level, have to figure out at least a little place where we can move forward with
I mean,
Lankford. Yeah, like, bro, you did some good work. We need you to step up. We need you to get on board with the Dignity Act. This is
it's
a
like it's
bipartisan.
exactly it's what we've always said, Arnold. It's all Old Testament, no New Testament with these guys, right? I mean, it's what it always comes back to. But then, I just wonder if, like you were saying, Lori, with all the businesses boarded up in Minneapolis, I think this is like the pits of cynicism here, but the only way to really get to these people is really on money, right? The economic impact. So in these red states, because I will forever say that Minneapolis, Tim Walz was the target with Minneapolis, LA, Chicago, these are all, liberal, so-called liberal blue locations, right? I mean, I think just because I've heard you, we've all heard it time and again with, the legislature, is it's going to have to be the economic impact that really gets to them, and so.
I do think that I do think that that is a very important argument. But what my
And I don't
approach to
like
this,
it. I don't like it. I just
I
want
don't
you to
like it either.
know that. Yeah.
I don't know why we can't make the moral argument.
Right, like that should be enough.
Should be enough. I don't like that we have to, again, pull all of
Right,
these other threads.
it should really just be about the humanity of these people, and they
That
deserve it.
full stop.
Right.
And so into that regard, until we can get these folks to change their, I really do feel like the only way to get these folks to change their minds is to build broad-based organizing coalitions. And I think that that is one of the most important takeaways from my time in Minneapolis. And I, we've talked a little bit about this, but I do think it's really important for people to think about the timeline of this particular chapter that we're in. People might remember that it was in May of 2025 that Stephen Miller publicly called for 3,000 arrests per day and for immigration raids at places like Home Depot. ICE responded with raids in LA. You mentioned that in June. And then in early September came the Midway Blitz in Chicago, Later that month, the National Guard was deployed to Portland and then to Memphis in October. And in that same month, then we saw raids surge in New York City, as well as in Charlotte and New Orleans. That was later in 2025. And ICE was running into the same kind of resistance: litigation, public protest, organized disruption, those strategies. And even where state and local leaders weren't exactly on the same page, communities pushed back. And we saw that in Minneapolis, although, I mean, this was an escalation of all of the previous strategies, was to absolutely inundate, to overwhelm the city with ICE agents, just overwhelm with sheer force. We have seen that strategy has faltered because the organizers there decided to tell a different story. And it's one that is rooted in their a century of labor movements and social justice struggles. There's something called the Minnesota model of organizing, which is a strategy that brings together groups across issues and sectors to fight and win battles that are too large for just one organization to face alone. And that is really what we have seen be effective in Minneapolis. What people don't love about it is indeed decades-long relationship building and organizing. This is not just an overnight everybody buy a whistle situation.
Well, that's what the right did.
Yeah.
Right? It's been like multi-generations of organizing, like with, the laugher shit, right? Like it's literally like, so I mean, I've never heard of the Minnesota model, but I'm going to learn more because this is phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, this is so the nationwide call for clergy to convene on Minneapolis was issued by an umbrella organization called MARCH, which stands for Multi-Faith, Anti-Racism, Change, and Healing. And MARCH is an explicitly pro-queer group of multiracial clergy and faith leaders who cross faith traditions and spiritual practices. They organize for liberation on Dakota land in the Twin Cities. So over the last from the night they first started in the 90s, and from the 90s through now, they have fought for marriage equality, Black Lives Matter, Standing Rock, and Line 3. They were engaged in the Minneapolis uprising, and then now, of course, leading in Operation Metro Surge. And the purpose of them wanting us to come was, yes, of course, to bear public witness to what's happening there. But it was primarily to equip us to with training and skills and commitments for sustained action across the country. What they said, what was, I cannot stop thinking about this quote. Everything is not lost. Everything is being tested. And their point was, listen, they are trying a million different things in Minneapolis so they can go to your town and try something specific. And so what people I've been people here at home in their desire to do something meaningful, they're buying a bunch of whistles, and that's not wrong, but that's not exactly where we are in Oklahoma right now. You mentioned it. Our biggest issue is the 287G agreement that Oklahoma Highway Patrol has with ICE. That the Oklahoma Highway Patrol can pull somebody over and put an ICE hold on them and wait when nothing they did has anything to do with their immigration status. And it's related to the legislature. Last year, there was a piece of legislation passed that required English proficiency to retain one's CDL. So truck drivers, that's why your
okay,
story
so
about the truck
connected.
drivers
yep.
and the
uh-huh.
hiring,
yep.
that's what that is. And, you know, one of the things that I'd love to gently remind our evangelical siblings or more conservative siblings is that this is hurting the people that you love, specifically all of those Afghan refugees that all of these churches have, you know, adopted and have been walking with since their arrival. Many churches did not just stop at making sure they had, you know, plates and bowls in the kitchens and in the apartments they were moving into. They have continued relationships with them. And many of those Afghan men got their commercial driver's license.
Oh,
It was a really great way for
oh,
them
my
to
goodness.
provide for their families. Did they need to be able to pass an English proficiency test to get that license? Should they have to be proficient in English, pass an exam to retain that license and keep their livelihood to support their families? Well, this is what's happening. They're getting pulled over. They've let those CDLs expire because they can't pass the English proficiency test. And then they're getting an ICE hold put on them. Because as we know, just because they've got, you've come legally, that you followed the rules, that you have your paperwork, that doesn't matter to ICE. So if you are worried about your Afghan beloveds, you better start speaking up now.
I can just imagine an alternate universe where the same Governor Stitt that touted how proud he was that the state of Oklahoma was hosting so many Afghan families had instead closed his tenure as governor talking about what the state was doing for those families and for the least of these.
Well, and I can't forget about what Gettner Drummond said about they should all be rounded up and sent out of the country. And I'm thinking, you know, this was a guy who, you know, was a fighter pilot and supposedly, you know, I don't get it. I just don't get it. I also would point out to you both that I'm not sure that if you listened to the governor's speech or if you read it today, that one could argue that he's proficient in English.
No, literally, like, literally, it was like third grade reading level. Like, there was no deep thoughts in that, right? Like, I posted about it on Facebook and I had to pull back just a little bit. Just a little bit. But I was just like, I swear to God, it's like he's just sitting around like spitballing ideas. That's really all it is, with his little cohort of, you know, convict David Ostro, John Budd, and Donnell
Bill
Harder, which,
Harder, yeah.
oh my God, yeah. And I'm just like, oh, there's no good ideas coming out of that group.
Well, so Lori, how do you take this training, in a sense, that you got in Minneapolis, and how's that? I assume that it's being applied now in Oklahoma.
Tell us more.
Yes. That's yeah. Because this will give people
I
hope,
want
I think, too.
this
Yeah.
In Oklahoma.
Yeah. So a lot of that work is being done by Voices lead organizer. Her name is Emily Bounds.
Mm-hmm.
It is also specific immigration related training is also being done by plenty of other organizations. And
I hear they're like standing room only right now. So yeah, they're
so
filling
right now
room only. Yep.
We are, Mayflower is hosting a Love Thy, a training being put on by Love Thy Neighbor, the ACLU of Oklahoma, and Dream Action Oklahoma. Right now, there are 400 people registered.
That's amazing.
And there's going to be some, like, obviously very specific immigration connect related trainings there, or learning. But what I think is really important in this moment is that people, like, we also take a step back and see that we actually, this is really important for a number of reasons, especially as Oklahoma legislators continue to chip away at our voting rights, chip away at our initiative petition, chip away at being able to do mail-in ballots. This is so important that we understand that we have to build broad-based coalitions. You are going to have to understand that no one is always an ally and no one is always an enemy. And it doesn't feel great all the time.
No,
Okay.
you're making me think of grad school, right? Like I'm literally, this is all conjuring up so much from grad school, and I'm just thinking of because Minnesota and Iowa and Wisconsin and Illinois just all have these phenomenal, critical cultural like programs. So it's like definitely in that vein of the Minnesota model. This is why I'm just like loving it so much. But just this idea of it's from structuralism. It's called serialism, right? Like you're not always on board. You don't always have to be, but when it calls you, and you step out of line and you do what you're supposed to do. Like,
Yeah, and that's the thing is the other thing is like, yeah, and yes, you can stay in your little pods of things because we need specialization. We don't need everyone trying to organize ice watches while also trying to, bridge the gap, the food gap, while also trying to return abandoned vehicles to families, while also trying to keep track of who has been taken and where and how to get them home. We need people who get specialized in stuff. We need people who say, yeah, I am absolutely able to, at a moment's notice, go and provide public witness for an ICE arrest. I know I'm down to do that. We also need people who are absolutely willing to work under the radar, to not show up at protests, so that you're not getting put on a list, so that you're available to do some other work that we can't possibly talk about on social media and shouldn't.
Don't make it digital. Keep it. Don't do digital. Yep. Take
Guys,
line,
only
folks.
text using encrypted
I heard of a friend who was like
Can
stuck
you believe we're having this
online.
conversation? I'm sorry. In 2026, can you
Yes,
believe?
I can.
Well,
Welcome, Arnold.
I can
Welcome.
absolutely believe we're having this conversation. Okay, all right. I will tell you that when I was at Powell's in Portland, the one book I picked up was a one I did not have of Molly Ivins, the great columnist, who's a dear friend that I worked with in Texas. And I was reading her stuff from the early 1990s, and it's the same stuff that we're dealing with today. It just, has not reached the level where we have armed federal, masked federal agents in the street shooting and killing people, but it's the same issues, and
No,
it's
I
the
mean,
same.
but we have like this really pernicious undercurrent of the weaponization of technology, right? Like that, like to what we're just talking about. Like, why keep that shit offline? Like, you don't trust it online. Don't post everything. Like, I'm probably way too loud, right? But like, I mean, it's so there's just that added layer of what you do digitally, electronically, can absolutely be held against you. So.
Well, yeah, and just the understanding that listen, a lot of this work is not glamorous. Most of it is not glamorous. You should not be doing this if you're seeking attention, or I mean, this is like it is by that is by definition performative action. It's just performative.
Posting
It is not
selfies for the
effective.
Insta.
It's not
Yeah, don't
strategic.
do it.
And so, I think that's the thing is, right now there are rapid response teams in Norman, Oklahoma City, Guthrie, Tulsa, Clinton, right? There are people who are on messaging apps that are literally letting people know where ICE is, what they're doing, what they're driving. And if you want to get plugged into that specific work, you are not going to find it on Facebook. Like, that's not it. And also, there's so much more work that needs to be done than just that. So I tell people all the time, everybody is able to do something.
I love it. I mean,
So I am curious, and I'm going to take this into a little more of a political realm just for a minute, because I am curious. There's a lot of hand-wringing nationally, I think, about how Democrats are handling this issue and whether they're playing their cards right in Congress and with the partial government shutdown and, and holding out for reform of ICE before, they'll go forward and worried about, oh my God, is it going to cause so much pain for people that Democrats will end up getting blamed? And I'm curious if you've thought through that and the political strategy of all that and wondering from a political standpoint, particularly from a congressional standpoint, how you'd like to see this play out.
well, I mean, I think that if they had, it's always something, right? It's always, oh, we're gonna stick to our guns on this, and then they don't. And so
But
I
Donald Trump flips all the time. I mean, it's like, but all of a sudden it almost seems to me like Democrats get
they give away their power
they get
every
a
single
heavier
time.
burden. Yeah, but it's like they get blamed more than Republicans do for flip-flopping in a sense. I mean,
I don't,
am I
well,
wrong on that?
I would say that it's a fair critique to say that Democrats flip-flop. They don't insist on fixing health care. They don't, and they never insisted on making the health care the insurance subsidies permanent. They could have done that, and they didn't. And so that's, I think, the critique is people are really tired of them not taking, like, not being principled about the stands that they take. Yeah, if we're going to reform ICE, this is going to be painful for a lot of people. I do not think that this is something that Democrats lose an election on. And I would actually argue that that's one of the reasons that they lost 2024 is because they didn't handle immigration properly, and they haven't for who knows.
Yep.
I don't really, I mean, I can't say how far back, but Obama wasn't a great immigration
He
president.
wasn't great
He
on
was
it either.
not.
Nope.
He was
Nope.
not.
Nope.
And so if Democrats are wanting to win something, then, like, why don't we just actually finally still, I say we, I'm actually not a registered Democrat and have never been my whole life. I have not been.
Oh,
So I don't really
so you
even
don't get
know.
to vote anymore to decide.
I do not. I do not.
We'll come back to
That's
that
a whole
question another
nother
time.
problem, a whole nother problem.
Another
I'm deeply
episode.
rooting for the Democrats to pull it together on a number of levels. But that's the thing is they won't take principled stands and I will say, while I don't agree with a lot of takes by the Republican Party, you know what? They're gonna dig their heels in. So it would be really nice if the Democrats could dig their heels in on defending immigrants,
I
standing
don't
up for them.
know her platform specifically, but I feel like Abigail Spanberger in Virginia could be a good lesson. After who, taking down Glenn Youngkin, but also, a very, very purple state with, very strong rural areas that could have easily upended her, run for governor. Her foreign, foreign service background, all of that, and she still got elected, right? So, I mean, I'm thinking like Alyssa Slotkin right now is just coming out and pulling no punches. I mean, and then you have, Hakeem Jeffries. I was like, I had so much excitement for you, Congressman. But there's just like not a lot. And so it's like, if they can't just be lit on fire now, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess I saw that, Republicans, a number of Republicans defected in the House, and so that they did secure 3 more years of ACA subsidies. So things like that, but that was like 17 people who were getting lit up in their districts because people were having to pay $2,000 out of pocket for their premiums every month all of a sudden. So I mean, shit like that, that's really like, okay, I'm thinking as I talk here, so I apologize, but I'm just thinking, so if those so we have one talking point there with they pounded home and they got the subsidies reinstated. But all these other things, if they can, if Democrats in Congress can continue to isolate DHS funding, so it's not in like some big omnibus package, right? Like they've managed to do the past couple weeks. These are all things that are really going to hit home over the next 9 months before the general elections in November. But at the same time, like kind of to, I think to what you're saying, Lori, is like I don't rely on the elected people to keep that in mind, right? Like it's us that's got to keep ring, like absolutely, hoisting them on their petards, proverbial petards, for the next 10 months. So in case we do actually get to have elections in November, maybe we'll get some people with some guts. But I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, and I will just say, to circle back to, a little like way back at the beginning of our conversation, we talked about Mayor Holt. The question is, would he have made that phone call without the overwhelming public outcry against
And
this?
why couldn't he have done it already, right? Like, why did he have to wait till it was a bad idea?
Yeah,
To
I
see that it
mean,
was a bad idea.
that's the thing. We noted, a lot of people are on the fence about Mayor Holt, and that's the thing is, I it's not that I think that I don't think we need to be on the fence or on one side or the other. He is an elected official who is accountable and responsible to the people, and so when he is not using his real power or soft power, then we need to get after him. That was the thing leading up to the city council meeting where the warehouse wasn't even on the agenda. It
But
wasn't even on the agenda.
it was on the agenda proverbially, like, metaphorically.
And over 60 people signed up to speak, and there were way more than that actually was present to fit, give their physical public witness in that moment. But up until then, it was, well, I just really can't do anything. That's not the kind of mayorship this is. Except it turned out to be
Right. Oh, I
a
happen
little
to
different
know a
than that,
guy.
right? And so, okay, now everything is information. Now we know the kind of encouragement that Mayor Holt needs to take action on issues that are really, really important to the residents of his city.
I mean, for God's sake, if he can get like the Olympic softball games halfway across the damn country. Right, if he can lobby for that, like,
I mean, I'm just saying.
I mean, and if you think, no, okay, sorry, I'm going back to OHP and ICE. If you could think about what Mayor Holt and Mayor Nichols up in Tulsa could do.
But let's remember too that in fairness to Holt, he has been more outspoken in support of the immigrant community in Oklahoma City than the vast, vast, vast majority of his Republican colleagues in elected office in Oklahoma, I think. Don't you? I mean, there have been a number of times during the course of his tenure that I recall that he spoke up and was very, and he's shown up in places that a lot of Republicans would not show up, right?
I mean, I appreciate that, Arnold, and I don't disagree with you, and I'm very glad for that.
No, I'm not.
Also,
Just remember, I mean, I want to slip this in. My old,
not a
my
photo
favorite,
op.
My
You know,
favorite
like you
thing,
guys
no,
talk
it
about
is. I
policy.
know, I know, I know. But I remember Frosty Troy once telling me that he ran into Henry Bellman in Tulsa, and this was after Bellman had served in the U.S. Senate and as the, in state as the state head of HHS or whatever it was. But he said, "Frosty, I've got a, I've got a scoop for you." And he said, "What is it, Governor?" And he, or Senator, whatever he called him. And he says, "Well, I'm going to run for governor again." And Frosty said, "Why? You were terrible the first time." And Bellman said, "Frosty, that's the problem with you reporters. You're so busy, putting black hats and white hats on politicians, and you never know when they're going to change hats." And Bellman ended up changing. He was a pretty good governor, his second go around. So Holt changes hats a lot, is my point. And he deserves the props where it's a little bit like you're meeting with Governor Stitt, who there, that may be, that's one of, maybe three fingers is all I need to think of things that I thought he did well as governor. But that, at least that's something, but, and maybe again, we've been so conditioned now to be so beaten down by the nonsense
I
that,
don't think we should accept breadcrumbs anymore, right?
okay,
Yeah, we shouldn't accept table
I
crumbs.
think you're right. You're probably right.
Yeah, no, I mean the stakes are so high right now because it's, I mean, I the if this was just about immigrants, that would be enough, right? This treatment of immigrants would be enough, but it's not. You know, it's about the rule of law. It's about the democratic order. It's about the things that we rely on for our own safety. And you know, it's about it's literally about fascism, right? So, and I know you don't think any of those things, Arnold. So, but it's just like this is not at all a simple issue of just what how people arrived in the United States.
But how do we encourage, and Lori, you may be better positioned than Marianne and I to offer a thought on this. How do we encourage the better angels that we occasionally see sneak out from these people who are constantly worried about getting run over by the loudmouths on the far right on these issues?
Yeah, I think that it is important. It is important to give credit where credit is due. I am really over fawning over anybody at all. But this is where I feel like it all comes back to broad-based organizing and coalition building, because the broader the coalition, the more cover that politicians have. That they might feel like they need, even if they don't. It can provide some cover for them to do things that they are nervous about, or you know, yeah, I mean,
Let me fill
nervous.
in.
Yeah, those are that it all comes back to that. So if they need some cover, great. Our coalition is broad enough that we're working with Catholics and Baptists and Lutherans and United Church of Christers. Oh my.
Yeah, no, like it's this I guess we
I
should
think
probably wrap it up, but
that's the point. To me, that's the point of this. That's the leverage that everyday Oklahomans have to say, no, this is un-American. We're not gonna tolerate this. And if that helps stiffen the backbones of some of these folks, of course it would help if people paid more attention to who they were voting for and got in the game and actually voted for a change. But that's another story.
Yeah, the time
Right?
for apathy has passed.
Yes, for sure. For sure.
Well, this was an amazing conversation. And like it was so thoroughly like intellectually satisfying. But you know, we got to get out of our minds and into action from here on out, like from forever, right? So to your point, like this is a long that we're playing the long game here. We're not looking for just tomorrow to change. We're looking for all tomorrows down the road. But thank you so much for your time tonight. Again, fantastic conversation, so much insight, so many actionable things. We should all read up on the Minnesota model. Because clearly there's so many other layers, like there's so many layers to this conversation. There's so many layers to what's actually happening in Minnesota right now. But it totally makes sense when you talk about it. So thank you so much. I can't wait to talk to you again. Have the
so
best.
So happy for the invitation. Thank you for what you're doing.
It was fantastic. Yeah, thank you. Tell your husband, Marianne, said hello. And
Arnold, I mean, come on, I'm sitting here too.
Oh, well, sure, but I said it first. So, yeah.
But I was thinking it.
Okay, well, both of us. Anyway, it's great to see you, and we'll talk again soon.
All right, take care, y'all.
Thank you for listening to this episode of ObserverCast. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends about us and share our episodes far and wide on social media. If you're interested in sponsoring ObserverCast, please give Arnold Hamilton a call at 405-478-8700 or drop him an email at ahamilton@okobserver.org. You can also support ObserverCast with a tax-deductible donation to the Oklahoma Observer Democracy Foundation, whose mission is to help create a better, more informed Oklahoma. And to help keep us on the air, visit okobserver.org and click on the Donate button on the upper right side of the homepage. We also urge you to subscribe to the Oklahoma Observer, now in its 55th year of comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comforted. We have a special digital subscription rate for ObserverCast listeners, only $1.99 a month for the first year. That's 50% off the usual rate for monthly digital subscribers. Just use the coupon code ObserverCast when checking out to get the discount rate. And finally, we want to thank Jared Deck for the music you're listening to in the background here. He's not just the resident of Norman anymore. He is now the Oklahoma State Representative for House District 44. Congratulations, Representative Deck. We're so proud of you. But you can still download his albums at iTunes and learn more, including dates for any upcoming performances at jareddeckmusic.com. Thank you.